listen to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome to episode 116 of Rogue Startups. This week, Dave and I have on a return guest. Phil Dirksen is coming on, and we are going to talk all about buying and selling online assets. So I think this is something Dave and I have talked a lot about on the buying side, but Phil's coming on to kind of finish the whole story with us. So Phil, how you doing?
Good. Thanks. Thanks for having me on. I think it was about 1 year ago that I was last on. So happy to be back.
Yep. Yeah. A lot has changed, right, Dave?
Yeah, constantly.
In some ways.
Yes. Much.
Just
much,
a little bit, right?
Just a little bit has changed in the last year. Yeah, when we were putting together the notes for the show here, trying to figure out what we were going to talk about and topics and things like that, when Phil was filling out the stuff in our Google Doc, I was like, holy shit, so much has happened in the past 6 years. You know, Phil has acquired and sold stuff. You've acquired stuff. You haven't sold anything yet, though, have you, Craig?
No, I'm a hoarder.
You're a hoarder.
First class.
Total yep. Hoarder. Yeah, I've bought and sold things, but I haven't sold anything in a while, and the last thing I bought was Recapture. But I was just sort of mentally going over the list of everything that all of us have put together in that time. That's a lot. I mean, it really surprised me to realize just how much has changed in, like, because you and I have known each other, Phil, for, like, what, since the first MicroConf. So that's 2011. So that's 6 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. So Phil really kind of coming full circle with, I guess we'll get into as much detail as possible, but a relatively kind of big sale after last MicroConf, speaking of MicroConf. So I guess, Phil, do you want to give kind of a background? Because I've heard parts of the story, but for folks listening, you want to give kind of the story of what transpired in April and May?
Sure, no problem. So I have, you know, WP Simple Pay is a Stripe Payments WordPress plugin that I have, but I also have had other plugins. And one that I had up until June, actually, is when the final sale, or when the sale became final, of 2017, this year that we're recording here. I also had Simple Calendar, a Google Calendar plugin. So what happened was the eventual buyer, I talked to several folks throughout the last 6 months before finding the eventual buyer. But anyway, we started up just a chat in Slack, in the MicroConf Slack. So as you guys know, MicroConf Vegas, that happened in April, they fire up a private Slack group for anyone to, like, you know, schedule meetups and introduce themselves and so on. And I met Kevin McCardle of SureSwift Capital in that Slack group, and he was interested in my WordPress plugins, and we got chatting on there, and then met in person at the conference. And his company ended up acquiring Simple Calendar. So that kind of, we finalized details later, but got to meet in person and talk about it as well. So that was great.
Did you have a feel at MicroConf that he would be the one to buy the plugin?
Yeah. Actually, that's when he basically communicated that he was pretty sure that that's what he wanted to do, and finalize it, because, you know, we had some chats on Slack for a while before then, but no, I wouldn't say it was 100% final there, but that's when it really turned the corner as far as, like, a good fit for them.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So did Kevin say why he was super interested in SimpleCal in particular, or WordPress plugins in general? I mean, it's kind of interesting that, you know, here's this guy that basically contacts you out of the blue and is suddenly expressing interest in your plugins. I mean, did he give you a sense of what he was looking for? I mean, I don't want to, like, reveal all of Kevin's cards and
and
completely lay him bare, because that's obviously not the point of the episode here. But, I mean, in terms of, the conversation, did you get any sort of a sense as to why he picked you and why he found this and what, you know, anything that you could sort of talk about there?
Yeah, sure. Well, going back even further, and we can go, we'll get back into our acquisitions and sales that predate this year, but this time around, since I had sold the plugin before, this time I wanted to see if I could find a buyer myself, just privately, like just a better fit, and somebody that I thought might get a lot of value of it because they're maybe already in the WordPress space, or they have, it fits with their product line, their existing customers. So I spent like 6 months. So the Google Simple Calendar is a Google Calendar events plugin. It's a way to show events on your WordPress site. It's in different ways and things like that. It doesn't have full like event ticketing, functionality, but there are a few plugins out there that do. So I reached out that are much bigger. So I reached out to those folks first, and they in the end they you know we all had we had good chats and talked about business and stuff, and they appreciated the me considering them, but in the end it didn't fit with their roadmaps. So for Kevin, it was a little bit different. And SureSwift, they had already been acquiring a few apps, not just in the WordPress space either. They did have one plugin though, WP Touch, which is a long time, one of the original mobile formatting types of plugins, predates even when responsive themes became real popular. And it's still a big plugin with a lot of free users and pro users. And they had acquired that earlier in the year. I think it was in January only. And so I knew they were interested in that. And he said, yeah, we're interested in all types, SaaS apps, plugins, and so forth. And so I don't think that, I specifically for WordPress. Oh, and then they have a big team of developers and support and such that, are skilled at these different types of products of SaaS and WordPress alike. So I think it was just the fact that their strategy, and this is public, they have acquired, I found out later too, they had acquired have acquired many more SaaS apps after that, later this year and earlier this year. And so that's their strategy, is buying up smaller, maybe solo founder type businesses, and building those up. And that's basically how it went. I even found out that he talked about this on a podcast, on the Indie Hackers podcast. I was the only person or to sell a business to him that he met at that MicroConf. Let's put it that way.
You weren't,
So,
right? Yeah.
wow.
No, there was other acquisitions that went
Yeah.
on that same week.
Yeah.
So.
No, I met Kevin at MicroConf Europe and had several chats with him. Super impressive guy in the model. So I think interestingly, the model they're running is it's basically a private equity firm that has like a buy and hold model for SaaS. So they're buying very like Phil, like very small digital assets, SaaS, WordPress plugins, whatever, and just holding them. They're not like venture capital or angel type where it's like looking for the exit. They're just buying them for cash flow. So I think it's really interesting. And Kevin's obviously a very sharp dude, but Phil, like you talked about, they have a whole team of people that are support and development and product, all building. And I think they've created a lot of synergy around like creating teams around similar technologies and similar type products and customer bases. So I think it's a really interesting model that he's got going. And it sounds like I mean, obviously it worked out really well and a good fit for you.
Yeah,
I'll be
I
interested to
think the
see
difference
where
is.
that model kind of flushes out long term for him.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure a lot of the founders are going with the acquisition, but in my case, since it was only a portion of my business, and that wasn't something I was interested in, didn't happen. But yeah, the developers I worked with in the transition period were, rock star WordPress developers. So they have those kind of folks over there already. So.
Nice, nice. So, let's talk about the sale itself. So when you get to the end of it and all the dust settles, inevitably every single time I always feel like there was stuff that I was like, holy shit, that went really well. I'm totally blown away because I didn't expect that. And then there were things that I'm like, oh, fuck, I so screwed that up. Why didn't I do that better? So what were those things for you in this sale, Phil?
Well, having already sold a Pinterest sharing plugin 2 years prior, I didn't make a lot of the same mistakes. So I made a
Woo!
lot. Yeah.
Score one for learning.
Yes, exactly. So the whole separation of records, financials, analytics, everything between, my other plugin, this payments plugin, the calendar plugin, completely separate and in as many ways as possible, that helped a ton. Okay, so it wasn't like all this time spending, trying to sort out financials or prove what went where and all that kind of stuff. I also waited. Well, it naturally it took a while to find the right buyer, but I also got the plugin to a point where, it was pretty stable, and I also wasn't adding a lot of features to it. And also the revenue was either slightly growing or pretty flat, for almost, it was, I was waiting till about 6 months of that, and it ended up being more like 12 months, by the time it sold, or by the time I met Kevin. So having that, seeing that steady or flat or to steady growth, with very, very little development time. So I'm recording, allocating development time, whether it's mine or another developer's, to, how many hours each week is spent on support, on development. And it was, both of those were very low for quite a while. So I know that made it attractive, a little more attractive as far as the profit, the calculated profit would be a little higher that way, as opposed to when you're knee deep in development on a product and you got to, expense all those hours of development time for that, for those months. So yeah, I guess, it was a different kind of sale to not having, so I used FE International again, like I have before, and you guys have, but I didn't use them to find the buyer this time. So, which is a big part of their business. We did use them on the selling side. Kevin and I both wanted to use them and had a relationship with them for, all their expertise in the, the legal contracts, covering every little detail, evaluating the business, all that sort of stuff. So they were still a big piece of this. But and I'm glad I used them and glad we used them again. But I not really any big mistakes. Some of the Kevin and SureSwift, they made it easier because they've been down this road many more times than me on the buyer side, and they really knew what they wanted and were, gave a didn't really want to negotiate for a long time. Just, the offer was, compared to other.
Right, here's a fair offer. We're not going to fool around with you.
Yeah.
We're going to value it this in a very standard sort of way that we've, sort of follows industry practices and not jerk you around.
Right. And that was all along with, what did, Thomas Smale of FE, he gave it a, him and his team gave it a value, that he thought it was worth. And we both said, yeah, that sounds fair. And so that part moved a lot faster than I would say your average. You don't know the buyer and seller don't know each other. You have the negotiating phase, that sort of thing, So,
Hey Phil, how did FEI, or like when did they come into the picture? So you met Kevin at MicroConf. When did Thomas and his team kind of come into really participating in the deal?
Right after that, actually, when, Kevin said, okay, let's do this, and coincidentally, of course, or not really coincidentally, but you guys see, Thomas and Effie at the MicroConf. They're there as well. So we both had chats with Thomas at the same conference. And I don't know when they actually started that process, but it was soon after, after MicroConf that Kevin said, okay, I've talked to Thomas and he's looked over all of your records and all that kind of stuff. And you know, here's what we, you know, let's take the next step. So,
yeah. And I know they have a, let's just say they have a typical commission rate and it's X. What, was it the same for their relationship with you in this deal, or I would suppose less, right? Than their typical kind of percentage.
I think less, but I say, I think because part of the offer from SureSwift was that they would cover those costs.
Okay.
So,
fair enough. Yep.
Yeah. So they, I don't know, they worked that out with FE, I guess, at that point.
Yep. Fair enough. Fair enough. Cool. Yeah. I mean, I think a big takeaway there is kind of generally working with a buyer who's seasoned and has done this a couple times makes your life as a seller a lot easier. I think that's definitely something that people like Kevin, and that the folks who run tiny.website, I don't know if you guys have seen this, they're at kind of a similar model, but they're just gobbling up actually kind of bigger SaaS apps and websites. But I think that's their deal, is like, make you an offer, all cash, close in 30 days. And yeah, they're really, really savvy, very fair, Dave, like you were saying, buyers that offer fair prices, just want to acquire digital assets. And I think from everything I've heard and talking to other founders who've sold these type entities, that it makes the selling process so easy because they're like acquisition machines. They understand how to buy companies and probably make the value higher for you than if you were going to sell it to, you know, Phil, you're going to go sell it to whoever. It would be a much longer, more difficult, probably less lucrative deal for you in the long run, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in part of a broker, you know, the broker's job is to, they're both sides of the market. They're, you know, they're vetting buyers and sellers. But still, even with that expertise, it's going to take time and a lot of, you know, Skype chats and whatever, you know, you know, when you cut out that part where, okay, the buyer and seller, they already want to do this deal. It's just the other, you know, you just, from there, it's makes it a lot quicker.
Totally, totally. So contrast this with the sale of your Pinterest plugin, you know, a couple of years ago, almost 3 years ago at this point.
Well, in that one, I used FE to find the buyer, which they did. But, you know, that took, like I said, a few times of talking to people on the phone. And the nice thing about that is the broker does try to vet and, we, you know, and take more calls than me as the seller, to narrow it down. And even when they get somebody, you know, really interested and ready to do it, they have the backup. They have other interested buyers on kind of as a backup, because a couple, you know, I've heard it in our circles as well. I mean, some people, just like buying a house, some people that are doing that back out at the last minute. So that happens here as well. So so that's nice that they have that, but it did take longer. I had one chat with one potential buyer that somehow it slipped through the cracks. They really weren't familiar with the WordPress space at all. So I ended up trying to explain WordPress to them.
Oh God.
And in the end,
where's the no button? Where's the no button?
So anyway, I think, yeah. So things like that. And then the eventual buyer, I think it's been long enough now. They basically didn't do anything really with the plugin. I mean, it's, you know, everybody has their priorities in business, and they didn't find it a priority to continue to work on the plugin, update it, you know, whatever. They just kind of kept it steady, basic support, and hasn't really gotten any updates in a long time. So it's a little bit like, you know, if you create something and hand it off to somebody else, you want to see it, you know, at least do as well as you think you could have, or hopefully better. And so this time around, that's one of the reasons I reached out to people personally, because I wanted to see if I could find a better home and see the product, you know, and the customers that were using it, you know, continue to see improvements over time, which so far has been happening with Simple Calendar. So that was definitely a difference there. I think that was it. I think I covered the other thing before, as far as like making, you know, just learning how it can be a little smoother and quicker to sell if you have all your records straight, and that sort of thing. So
I recently went through kind of separating out our Castos, our podcast hosting platform, books from Podcast Motor. We just created a separate business account, a separate LLC. Is that what you did, Phil, for the calendar plugin?
I had everything under one corporation, but two totally different websites and product names. You can go further with that. I actually had only one bank account. I might do that different next time, two bank accounts. But I had two different PayPal accounts, two different. So under, you know, with Stripe, I have one login, but you basically can have separate accounts, which is a nice feature in Stripe. So those were separate.
Right.
Stripe has made that super easy to be able to transfer accounts within login. So they have a notion of the user that's logged in and then the account under that, and you can sort of swap those around from person to person really easily. And I love that about Stripe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Super simple. Yeah.
Unlike PayPal. So. Stripe. You suck.
Stripe is not fucking a lot of stuff up these days, are they? It's amazing. I mean, it just keeps getting better.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
So I have and this is maybe too personal, but what are you planning to do, or what did you do with kind of the profits from the sale? I mean, kind of took generally. I don't know if you went and like bought a Porsche or a Gulfstream or something like that, but like I guess how did you kind of approach it mentally?
Phil is the only one with a Gulf Jetstream coming into Fresno, California.
That's right. I am not spending it too quickly like I did last time. Let's put it that way. So what I did too quickly after I sold the Pinterest plugin was like, okay, let's you know, hire another full-time developer and, you know, let's ramp this up without really taking into consideration, you know, my runway and all these different things that you're supposed to responsibly do. So that worked out in the end, but you know, the cash from that sale was depleted pretty quickly when you double your development staff. So this time I'm not rushing into that, even though I could totally use another developer. It's not hurting that bad yet. I want to reach certain, I guess, sales or financial markers with my only plugin now, my only product now, WV Simple Pay. And then I'll consider that as well, just as far as monthly cash flow and sales and all that go. That's no big plans with that chunk of cash, I could say, that are, you know, immediate, but just trying to be smart about it long term. And it's my only product now, and that was the intention. So my thinking before was having multiple plugins, and like you, Dave, you have multiple products.
I have multiple headaches.
It's horrible. No, it's horrible. Yeah.
I have cluster headaches for a business.
But that is a reason I sold Simple Calendar, but it's also something you lose is having, okay, if one starts not really working, then you have the others you can focus on, or vice versa. And so I don't have that anymore. So just making sure my runway is a little bit longer if things go south.
Yeah, but I think that's like a crutch, right? Like that's, if this doesn't work out, I'll go do something else. But like, I think the reality of our type of business is in almost all circumstances, you can make it work out, right? Yep. I mean, other than like Stripe releasing their own plugin, WP Simple Pay is going to be fine, right? So I think you having a lot of focus is a really good thing, because you'll do better at it than you could running two or three different things. And I speak from the guy running two or three or five different things, not entirely by choice. But yeah, I mean, I think having one thing to really focus on definitely gives you the potential to hit that one thing out of the park. You can do two or three or five things okay, but the sum of those is not going to equal doing one thing really, really well.
I'm going to say,
maybe that's because I'm overextended at this point, but that's my feeling.
Could be. I'm going to say it depends. And here's why I'll say it depends. Because I had businesses back in 2012, 2013, when Panda and Penguin came out with Google. And literally overnight, Google fucked you. So all of a
Yeah, those
sudden,
are not businesses, right? I mean, if Google can update something and you get screwed, it's not a business.
yeah, but if it's your cash flow and it's part of your business model, it is. So there, I'm not going to say across the board all businesses if you just focus on this one thing. What if I had just sat there and focused on SEO and tried to raise it from $5,000 a month to $10,000 a month? I would have been doubly fucked, right? I agree with you that certain things are better business models than others. And clearly, I got out of it because I was uncomfortable with where I was at and the control that Google had. But, just like we said when we got on the call today, I got an email from Magento saying they are now doing a first-class integration with one of the top email marketing things in e-commerce. And so all of a sudden, something like that makes you go, wait a minute, I'm in an ecosystem and somebody could come in and slap me at any time and put out something that's more preferable to my customers than what I have. And that is always the danger of working in any ecosystem, whether it's Google with AdSense or Shopify and apps or Magento and extensions or WordPress and plugins or pick your space. It doesn't really matter. Any of them will do the exact same thing. You're possibly one release away from having your product completely irrelevant. And that's always a risk. You always have to look at that as a risk. And so, when I started doing this, my wife said to me, well, what if X goes belly up, where X was whatever business I had at the time. I think the plugins were the very first one. So we'll say that. I don't know if that was really true or not, but so let's say what happens if AWPCP goes belly up? I said, I don't know. And so that's when we started looking at other things and it was like, all right, we've got this much money from these previous things that you've done. Why don't you invest it in other non-plug-in businesses to reduce our risk? And I said, that totally sounds reasonable. But then you end up on the opposite side of that coin, which says, now I've got three or four things that aren't related to each other. And you're constantly like running around between them, or you have to focus on one and ignore the rest. And either way, you end up, not giving your all, like you said, to that one thing that could really knock it out of the park. Obviously Rob did the same thing. Let's use Rob as an example for a second here. He did that with Hittail and Drip. Realized that Hittail was going to be a drag on his productivity and his focus, so he sold it. Focused entirely on Drip. Now he's, he's the one with the Gulfstream and living the mad thug life.
No, I agree
Mad Thug
completely.
Rob.
The
Well,
yeah.
we'll have to link to the Jason Cohen MicroConf talk. This is
Oh, Rich
before I knew
versus
what
King.
MicroConf was. No, it was like it's basically like the ideal SaaS business. And he, for like
Yes.
an hour, runs through what an exact ideal SaaS business is like. And
Oh, I remember
it's
that one
I've
too. That
watched
was
it
good. Yeah.
two or three times in the last couple of months. It's amazing. Yeah, we'll have
Oh,
to link
yeah.
that.
Very, very good one. One of the best MicroConf talks ever.
Yeah. But I think if you
So.
get one of those, it's worth focusing on. And maybe, Phil, that's kind of like subconsciously what you saw is like your calendar plugin wasn't going to be Drip or whatever that was throwing
Right.
off 20, 30, 50 grand a month, right?
Right. No, I definitely saw more potential and still do more potential for the payments plugin. Just as far as its ceiling, and like I don't know if I'd say I hit a ceiling with Simple Calendar, but it's yeah, the split focus definitely was what was eating at me. But I think another caveat to that is if you can and you're good at hiring even just one or two people around, and like that can be that team that takes care of that product. And you can clear your headspace for what you need to focus on say, maybe it's just the marketing side of things, or maybe it's just one product for a week or something like that. That can work too. I see guys like so like Pippin and his line of products, they're I think each of them he has enough people on his team, maybe 15-ish, where there is a lead for each of his three products, EDD, Affiliate, WP, and Restrict Content Pro. You know, if your products can appeal to the same customers, of course, that's a big plus. Mine could not. And, you know, even with Pippin's, those have some crossover with each other. So those are challenges, of course. But Dave, I got to say too, like, you have valid points. If one goes belly up or goes down or, you know, WordPress does something, so the plugins, you can't, they're just all of a sudden nobody's going to buy them. I mean, worst case scenario, you ramp up. I know it's not your ideal choice, but you ramp up consulting for a while and figure out what to do. You know what I mean? So
yeah, I mean, all of us as developers have an implicit backup plan, whether we want to admit it or not.
Right.
You know, if you don't have those development skills, that you're, you know, some kind of guy that did sales for a pharmaceutical company. Yeah. Well, then you're screwed, and hopefully you're living in France and can take advantage of their generous socialist system. But
chômage.
In all seriousness, you're right. There's a fear that's there about having to switch back to the freelancing lifestyle and trading hours for dollars that really just isn't appealing, I think, once you've gotten a taste of what this life is like. At least it's not for me. I'm not going to speak for everybody. Maybe some people just love to get out there and deal with clients and late invoices and overreaching requirements and changing scope and all that kind of crap. And they just totally get off on that. I did that for a long time. You know, I just don't want to do it anymore.
It's providing solutions for clients, Dave.
Yeah. Plus all that other crap I just said. So
plus the rest.
Yeah.
Well, that like I said, that is worst case scenario. But I mean, as far as putting bread on the table, and you know, the risk reward, it's a personal choice too. It's, you know, how risk averse and all that sort of thing are you? So, yeah.
That's true. It's true. All right. Well, let's shift a little bit here. Let's talk about the market conditions in 2017 for buying and selling sites, businesses of any kind, whether WordPress or SaaS or whatever. So, based on what you saw, Phil, what do you see that's changed radically in the market since you put Pinterest up for sale?
Well, so a lot of people have approached, you know, colleagues of ours in the WordPress space especially, have approached FE with their plugins to be denied, I guess. And I think that's basically just them as a brokerage. I wouldn't say all brokerages, but they are moving more and more up market. I mean, they did the Drip deal, which is obviously much higher. They're just doing bigger deals now. So like a lot of us selling software, if we're moving up, you know, closer and closer to enterprise, we're not selling the cheap version anymore, right?
Yeah, no, so $9.99 a month after that.
Right. So I think it's simply because they're doing well and they're growing and they're, you know, finding bigger deals that I got an email back from Thomas saying there's nothing against plugins. It's just the demand for them is less than, you know, SaaS is the highest demand compared to everything else, number one, as far as acquiring online businesses or software. And then also, you know, they're willing to look at it if it's reached, you know, if it's a certain number of annual profit or monthly profit. So I think that's just simple supply and demand and where they're at there. Because you look, okay, so on that note, SaaS, I don't know the multiple now, but it's what, 3 or 4 or 5 times annual profit?
Four at least, yeah.
I would say that the range is between, the low end is 3.5. Like, that's for almost an underperforming SaaS, if there's even such a thing out there like that. And the highest I saw was between 4.5 and 6. Somebody actually listed theirs at 6x on, I don't remember which brokerage it was at, but I saw the numbers and my jaw hit the floor. And I'm like, dude, wow, that's impressive. 6 year payback time. I mean, and this was like
and
a
then they
seven...
got 5x 2 weeks later, probably.
Well, I don't know what they got, but this was like a seven figure sale. So, I mean, yeah. If you're going to acquire something like that, you had better have a solid growth plan where you're going to be able to take this thing up market or increase your growth rates or the overall ARR by 40-50% if you're going to make this thing pay off in a reasonable time frame, because you can't wait 5 years for that kind of money unless you just, you know, have more cash than you know what to do with, which, whew, man, I'd love to have that problem. But
well, I wonder if that's where like the private equity crowd comes in, is they can afford, if they have a hold strategy, they can pay a ton of money now for cash flow in the future and make it work, right?
Yeah, as long as, but again, I still think that same caveat is in there. They've got to have a growth plan. And if they don't have a growth plan, like, why would you invest 5x in a seven-figure SaaS if you don't have a way of double or tripling that within 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. I think their timeline is just much different than yours or mine might be. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. They clearly don't have a, oh my God, I have to feed my family on this in 3 months sort of time frame.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. I think the risk profile is really different. And I think a lot of these savvier institutional buyers are seeing that. It's like, okay, Phil had 200 customers. Those customers are going to pay us next month, no matter what a percentage of them are. Versus spending 50 grand to go build this thing and having no customers, it is very risky. So I think that the risk profile hasn't changed. And I think more people are realizing the value of existing customers, especially for like, you know, some more savvy or institutional buyers coming into the SaaS, especially the SaaS market. I think that's why the valuation is so high now. Not to mention the fact that you don't get any money, any return on your money in the bank, which is something we talked about with David Rosenthal a little bit.
Yeah, I'm, you know, looking at the other side of the deal, and I would say that some aspects of this got a little riskier, and I'd like to hear what you have to say about this, Phil, but when I was out digging for SaaS this time last year, you had to be, like, execution ready on the spot. Literally, a deal shows up in your inbox, you got to be ready to go right then, right there. If you aren't, you're not getting it. Like, any hesitation on the good deals and you're out.
Yeah, well, I never experienced that on either side, just the plug-in and how I approached it this time. But yeah, that would be tough. So when you got to that, you had to basically build up to that point where you could do that.
Oh my God, it took months to get there. Like,
yeah.
I've failed. Like, you would go through and you would wait for a good deal, and then you would go through and then find, oh, well, I got to do this one thing to execute on it. And it was like, nope, we're moving on. What? Wait a minute.
Oh, wow.
I just, like, just give me 3 or 4 weeks. I'm not, like, asking for the world here. And nope, they're like, we've got another one over here, all cash in hand. So all the good stuff, cash in hand. Wow. So you've got to be literally that ready to go. So if you don't have all cash in hand and you need to do like SBA loans, which, by the way, not all the deals support, then you've got to be in contact with somebody from SBA, have pre-qualifications up to a certain level, and be able to contact them with the details of the business the day that it shows up so they can start the process. And even then, it still takes, like, if they're hammering as fast as they can, like literally if the Flash was doing the deal himself, it's still like 60 days. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was like, that's the fastest they could close. They said, we might be able to pull 45 if these following things are not present in the deal, which mostly they are. So they shave off 2 weeks at most if certain things can pre-qualify them past a certain point. But most of the time it's like, well, it was last year anyway. I don't know what it is right now because I haven't obviously looked since then. But last year it was like 6 to 8 weeks just to close.
Hmm.
Yeah. And most buyers are like, eh. Not, I mean, compared to like a cash in hand deal, they're not that interested. So
yeah,
it's tough. Yeah. It's tough. Hot markets are tough.
So Phil, interestingly, I wonder what, after selling the calendar plugin, what your perspective is on WP Simple Pay and potentially selling it at some point. And not so much like could you sell it or what would it sell for, but what would you do after that? Because I know that's kind of like the thing with a lot of us that have a main focus. Maybe we have other things on the side, but like if you sold your main focus, why would you sell it, I guess? And what do you think you would do afterwards?
Yeah, that
would
be tougher.
Other than a dance in the street.
Right. yeah, that'd be tough because that I've never considered selling everything. Basically, each of these sales, like you said, has been a portion of my business. I didn't have anything really going on, or I did have something else going on. But yeah, this... I would obviously there's a price for everything, but I would have to take a long time to think about that because the overwhelming thing is I'd look back and see how long it took me to get to where I'm at now and starting over with that. And
yeah.
But obviously you're not starting completely over. You have your network of people and you have your skills that you've built that you can repeat hopefully better the next time. But yeah, starting over with the product without, from scratch, without having any sales going at all. I don't know. I guess I haven't really thought or given that serious thought, you know what I mean? Or even, approaching people about that. But but yeah, I don't know. I don't know. We'll see. But I have, I'm looking at things like not different products with WP Simple Pay, but, expanding into different, instead of just relying on Stripe, expanding into different payment gateways, like we
Braintree
said, PayPal,
and, yeah.
whatever the
yeah.
customers want that tell me. And then of course expanding into a SaaS. So it can be used outside of WordPress as well. Anyway, yeah. So yeah. Anything, Craig, I don't know if you wanted to add anything with your acquisition of a plugin on the, as far as the WordPress side. I know it was a different deal, but of Seriously Simple Podcasting. But
yeah, I mean, for me, it's been roses, really. I mean, it's been a lot of work, but I mean, I think the place that we bought Seriously Simple Podcasting in was like perfect for using it as a place to launch a product, a paid product from. And I would love to find another opportunity like that. Cause I think, I mean, at this point, Castos and the Seriously Simple Podcasting plugin are like a legit business. It's growing even just now, like 7 months later, really predictably, everything is relatively stable. Which in the world of like SaaS, 7 months is nothing, so like a year from when it's almost a year from when we bought the plugin. But I mean, I think that's a really short amount of time to have like predictable, stable revenue and a product that's really solid. So yeah, I mean, I would totally advocate for in some way buying like a platform to launch on top of. And I've seen this approach and I've heard of this approach with like just buying like an audience or buying like a content site that's related to the product that you want to launch. So like, say you want to launch a Pinterest plugin or a Pinterest SaaS scheduling tool or something like that. You buy like a Pinterest aggregator or something on Flippa for like $500 and just redirect all the traffic to your new SaaS app. I mean, that's not exactly what we did with Seriously Simple Podcasting because we're using it as like a tool in our SaaS app now, but that's the idea is like, can you somehow acquire the audience that your SaaS app will cater to? And I think it's a cool way to go. And yeah, I would love to find another way to do it. But I think if you don't have that vision at the beginning, that it's really tough and that like spreading your focus is potentially really dangerous. But I think if you can say like, I'm going to buy this relatively small thing and then I'm going to do X to it or with it or alongside it, then it can be a really powerful way to just like aggregate influence and domain authority and audience and page views and things like that for your paid product.
I mean, Phil, I'm sure you would love to buy whatever, a site that would bring you another 10,000 viewers a month, right? And that would be a fantastic investment for you, I would think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, things have popped up even sometimes, like a big WordPress site, like, was it WP Cube, Dave, that came up?
Yeah, that was one of them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, it's got too much traffic and was too expensive. But I'm like, hey, that'd be nice to have this high traffic WordPress site and you know,
totally.
Use all that.
Yeah.
But
well, it came with a high price tag.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, no, that's great.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think those opportunities are relatively rare. And it's really just one step up from starting from scratch, right? Like, we put all the time and money into building the product, the paid product, and now the audience is there. So that solves kind of the marketing problem, but it definitely doesn't solve all your problems. But I think it if you can, it definitely is like a shortcut in some aspect, which is nice.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, what do you think of the market conditions? And do you have any questions for Phil or the rest of us about acquiring websites or selling something of your own? Hit us up. We'd be happy to hear from you. podcast@roguestartups.com. And if you got 2 minutes, leave us a review on iTunes. We'd love to hear from you. Till next week.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.